Cape Talk. Family Matters.
Now, today's conversation was actually prompted by an email from a listener who wrote to me a little while ago asking us to host a segment on gambling addiction because she'd witnessed at first hand its destructive consequences in her own home. A close relative is affected, and what she wrote to me was the following. This family has lost everything. Their home, their cars, his job, the respect of his children, and the mental health of his partner. Very, very serious consequences being described there. And we're delighted to have several guests with us in studio today to help us get to grips with the issue of gambling addiction, to understand what it is and isn't, what it looks like, how it can hide in plain sight, and to talk about the impact it can have on families and society. First of all, I'd like to welcome André Leroux, who is a social worker who treats gambling addiction on both an inpatient and outpatient basis at the Iklande Addiction Clinic here in Cape Town. He's also affiliated with the National Responsible Gambling Program as a treatment professional. André, great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
And then we have two guests who have very personal experience with this issue because they themselves are gambling addicts, and they have found a great amount of help and support through Gamblers Anonymous. And they are here today to share their own stories with us, and I hope encourage others to seek help if they recognize themselves in these stories. Mark and Tony, welcome to Cape Talk, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Pippa.
André, before we hear Mark and Tony's stories, let's get a bit of perspective on the problem of gambling addiction and how it's viewed by treatment professionals, because I think there are a lot of people who are still stuck in the mindset of, oh, it's an issue of poor impulse control. If you really wanted to stop, you would just simply not go into the casino. But medically, it's classified in the same group of disorders as drug addiction is.
Yes, Pippa. It's in the diagnostic manual, it's now seen as a mental disorder or psychiatric illness, and it's actually a separate entity away from other issues. So it's recognized as a serious disorder.
It's real, and it's very serious indeed. And I read to you a little bit of what that listener wrote to me earlier. We had a voice note come in at the start of the show from a listener saying she goes to Grand West occasionally and sees people sitting there for hour after hour after hour, socially isolated, spending time with the slot machine instead of with their families. And her question was, what is the magnet? What is the attraction that draws somebody there? I don't know if you'd like to comment before we get perhaps the personal answer to that question from Mark and Tony.
Yeah. I think for addicted gamblers, they go into an altered state. So they actually have their own sort of bubble that they go into. Mm-hmm. And it's like an escape, very much like somebody who would be taking chemicals or, you know, would spend time in a activity that is an escape from reality.
Mm. As some people would turn to drink, it's the same concept. I think at this point, let's hear a first person account, if we may, from both Mark and Tony. Mark, can you tell us briefly how your addiction unfolded?
Yeah, Pippa, it started off basically just as a little pastime, and then more or less developed into an obsession, where I was going online all the time, couldn't really stop myself. My business started to fail. My family relationships and my friends, was losing them all. Mm. You know, the lies started coming. There were so many lies. Trying to justify what I was doing. An example would be I would instigate a fight with my 7-year-old son so that my wife would take him out of the house so that I'd be able to gamble without any distractions. Another example would be that a client phoned me for my business and wanted to know where I was with the meeting, and I was gambling. So he was really angry with me. I thought, well, what am I going to tell this guy to get him off my back? And I told him that my son had died, so that I could carry on gambling without any more distractions. That's how messed up my life was.
How long ago was this, Mark?
7 years.
Okay, and how long did it take before you actually were able to recognize that you had a problem?
I don't really know. It was going on for so long. It was ultimatum after ultimatum from wife and other family members and friends. And eventually I contacted the National Responsible Gambling Program. They asked me 20 questions. I answered yes to 17, which identified me as a gambler. I took up several of their free counseling sessions, and I started going to Gamblers Anonymous meetings And I've been trying to live the Gamblers Anonymous lifestyle since then.
So how long would you say, I mean, I know you can never say you're cured of your addiction, you're free of your addiction, but how long has it been since you actually gambled?
It's 7 years in October.
7 years of recovery. Yeah. Okay. Mark, I mean, you talk about the ultimatums from loved ones. The original question that prompted this conversation came from somebody who was feeling utterly helpless. They tried the ultimatums. They tried threatening. They tried pleading and begging. They tried getting the person to go for help. But they just could not get them to admit that they had a problem in the first place. And maybe, Andre, you could respond to that. What is the best way forward for a family that's in that position?
I think to admit that there is a problem, they don't always have to admit what the problem is, but actually coming to realization that this isn't okay, we're not okay as a family, and actually just saying, well, let's try and see what kind of help is available. So even if the actual gambler is still a little bit resistant, that's okay, because we can work with the family and with people as long as they make contact. So we can guide a lot of people, even employers, etc., with how to help somebody with the problem and then getting clearer definition of what the problem actually is.
Fascinating that you mentioned employers on that list, because it must be a heck of a tricky position for an employer to be in, wanting to support the well-being of their employee, but also knowing that this kind of behavior surely places the business at huge financial risk.
Exactly. But I think often the decision is made that if this is an employee that's worthwhile keeping, that let's rather offer the opportunity for some help and at least give them another chance. But on condition that they actually get the help that they need.
It's a big decision. And, I mean, in your experience of dealing with employers, are many of them willing to go that far? Or do many of them just say, you know what, sorry, we cannot have you working here?
Out of my experience, I think often the smaller companies are more willing, because the policies and the involvement's more personal. But I think that sometimes when you're looking at the larger companies, it's difficult to kind of let things slip. But certainly, you know, all it takes is one boss who's actually willing to plead for somebody's case. And often that's a open door.
Tony, I saw you nodding emphatically during that part of the conversation. What was your experience? Did your gambling impact on your work?
Absolutely. Papa, I I mean, in very brief, I went through a few different jobs as a result of gambling. Could easily have had legal implications, which those employers chose not to follow. So I was very fortunate from that perspective. But I did some crazy stuff as a result of my gambling, both from work perspective, family perspective, and a lot of perspectives. Yeah. So
tell us briefly how it all started. So, and what happened.
Yeah, I think the obsession in the beginning was a teenage thing, sort of 16, 17 years old. Again, very social, fun, but it gripped me like it didn't seem to grip the other mates that were around. And the obsession became with money. I thought this thing was all about money, and it was going to make a lot of money. In hindsight, obviously, I've learned that this addiction's got nothing to do with money. Money is just a horrible consequence of the gambling. And that's why over all the years of gambling, I always thought if someone could bail me out now, everything's going to be okay. I'm just in this fix or that fix, a quick 20 or 50,000 or 100,000 from someone, everything will be okay. I'll start fresh. Those bailouts came. They were probably poison to my addiction, because within days I was back doing the same thing again. It started off with money that was mine. It started then becoming borrowing from family and friends, and then it turned to illegal activities, be it theft, fraud. I was well known at all the pawn shops. It gets ugly, really, really ugly. But I think the hardest part of it all, those are all financial implications and material, is the really waking up in the day and having to look at yourself in the mirror and not really wanting to live anymore, because that's not a nice place to be. And I don't think it's only caused by gambling, but gambling is a huge one, because it can be kept secret for so long. You know, there's not like a physical showing to other people that, hey, this guy's been gambling. Drinking and drugs often have someone can be drunk and fall over or OD and end up in hospital. Gambling can carry on to the point where people are ready to commit suicide, and other people didn't even know it was taking place.
Yeah.
Very scary. Yeah.
Tony, I mean, you talk about that moment of looking in the mirror and hating what you saw. Was it one of those moments that made you feel you wanted to reach out for help? Because you're sitting here talking to us today, obviously having gone through some kind of recovery process. What was that turning point for you?
Yeah, it's very difficult to say because they always talk about this cliche of rock bottom. And I'm not sure, because I could have had many incidences of job losses, of ultimatums from, at that point I was married, all those kinds of things that one would have thought, that's it. Now I'm making a turn. And when I finally did make a turn several years ago, I don't really know what pushed me into that direction more than the other times, but I think I was just really, really, really tired and prepared to do anything that was suggested. Times before, I'd kind of been prepared to stop. I think a lot of that was for family that had been moaning at me, or employers that threatened with a last opportunity, or whatever the case was. And this time was really for me. I was tired. Had I had the guts, I would have taken my own life at that point. I was pretty low, which is sometimes hard to remember, but I know that was a reality. Yeah.
How long ago was that, Tony?
So this recovery stint has been just over 10 years. It's sort of been an up and down life in general, because life isn't always beautiful because gambling has stopped. I realized that the gambling wasn't the issue, that I was needed to do a bit of work on myself. And the gambling was a fantastic, as Andre mentioned, a fantastic escape, because it's like an anesthetic. When I'm gambling, life disappears.
Yeah.
Be it horse racing, machines, whatever. I mean, and the stock market, I know a lot of people as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've touched on so many important issues there. Andre, I mean, his comment that it wasn't the gambling, was the side effect of a deeper problem. Is that a common thread?
It's absolutely that. The moment that he referred to, I call a moment of clarity. So there's like, and it can be a split second that you actually just see yourself in reality. You know, like the moment of actually looking in the mirror and say, what's happened to me? So yes, the gambling's a symptom. And of course you can't address the root without the symptom being assessed and managed. You know, so very often that's the point where somebody actually says, yes, there is a deeper level. And I can stop gambling, but I still have to work on myself. You know, so the actual stopping is only the beginning
of that process. Yeah. A couple of questions and comments coming in on our Twitter and WhatsApp line. And just to repeat again, you're welcome to send a voice note if you prefer to 0725671567. A tweet from Man in the Middle saying, a family member of mine was banned from Grand West, but simply moved over to online gambling, playing on horses and other sports games, etc. You made that comment, Tony, that there's so many different outlets for this addiction. Is that part of the problem, Andre, that you can manage and shut it down in one place and there's another opportunity waiting somewhere else?
Yes, we call it substitution or shifting your addiction. So sometimes it moves to other forms of gambling or betting. And in some cases, even it could switch over to chemicals, in fact.
We often get asked, is there such a thing as an addictive personality? Is there some kind of personality trait or common thread that makes a person more susceptible to, if it's not gambling, to drug addiction, to alcohol addiction, etc.?
Yes, it appears that there's a certain percentage of the population that is more at risk than others. Where that actually lies is very difficult to find. Mm. But we do find that people with addictive problems very often struggle with it on a variety of dimensions.
Interesting WhatsApp from someone commenting that playing the lotto can also be addictive. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. Like the loss of control is, most of us will go and we'll buy a certain amount or a certain number. And the person who really becomes addicted to it, the obsession and the scheming in their head of, well, what could I change? And have I tried this mixture? Or that they even start with the beliefs of, I've actually won, and find it very difficult to believe that the number isn't really their winning. And then the other part of the lotto addict is the belief of, how am I going to spend this, and how is this going to solve all my problems? when actually we know that very often the winner has got more problems and more to lose in fact.
Interesting.
Yeah.
If you've just joined us late to the conversation, with me in studio, André Leroux is a social worker who treats gambling addiction at the Iqande Addiction Clinic here in Cape Town and is also affiliated with the National Responsible Gambling Program. We're also talking to two guys who've been through this themselves, have come out the other end, are members of Gamblers Anonymous, Mark and Tony. And Mark, I was really impressed to hear you say that you did reach out via that National Responsible Gambling Hotline, because we hear the ads saying... what's the word? Winners know when to stop. And I've often wondered how many people actually respond to that. Clearly they do, and it was the key to getting help for you, Mark.
Yeah, Pippa, I was actually, as the other as Tony was saying, I was quite suicidal pretty much, and I was reaching out. I thought it was the end for me, and I was just prepared to take anything that I could get. Mm. My psychologist recommended that I phone them. And I did, and I'm grateful that I did.
André, Mark mentioned a list of 20 questions to which he answered yes to 17 of them, which gave him a fair indication that he did have a problem. Can you sketch for us a couple of those? Because those, we're talking here about the warning signs that you have a problem. What are the big ones?
I think the loss of control. So the larger amounts, the more time, the going back to recoup what you've lost, the unmanageability and the chaos that your life results in, the very often the money is just a quantity, when actually if you begin to look at the quality of life that person is having, is that it's really a poor performance and extreme distress. Because a lot of them come to a GP with some symptoms. They don't necessarily link the symptoms to their behavior. Mm. So reaching out to the places where gambling often happens is really important, because that's the point where they're suddenly faced with, I've lost it all, can't pay the basics, and, coming back again for trying to recoup that.
You offer treatment options on inpatient basis, outpatient basis, group therapy. Can you chat to us about how do you treat somebody with a gambling addiction? Yeah.
We treat it very similar to treating chemical addictions, but we call gambling and sex and love and spending process addictions. So it's a behavioral addiction. But there are certain similarities, so they actually fit in quite well with a general addiction program. Mm-hmm. But then we separate them in terms of groups at times, and of course the individual sessions. The difference between an inpatient and an outpatient is often how bad it's been, and also the psychiatric state that the person is in. If they are suicidal, very depressed, it's far better to try to treat it inpatient. And then the after treatments, really the aftercare and the support groups afterwards, of which of course GA plays a huge role, because they often feel that there's one place where I'm really understood. The individual therapist will try to get to the root of things and address the things that are underlying the actual addiction.
Okay. So GA, Gamblers Anonymous, has been, I know, to both of you a lifeline and a place to be heard and to feel understood. Just in closing, Mark and Tony, do you still go to meetings, and how often do you do so? Mark?
Yeah, I go at least once a week. When I started, it was 2 Gamblers Anonymous meetings, and I've cut down now, but I definitely need the meetings every week. It's medicine for me.
Okay, and Tony, how about you?
Yeah, also once a week still, quite involved in that side of things. And it's it certainly is not the thing that's going to necessarily keep me from gambling. That is what I do in between, the other 6.5 days a week.
Yeah.
But it's a great reminder as to where I don't want to be again, and an opportunity to sort of help others through my experience as well, because it would be pretty selfish to just grab and run.
Well, you've done exactly that, I think, in the stories that you've shared here today as well. So I really want to take my hat off to both of you for being willing to speak so frankly about your experience. Because it is, Andre, it's one of those shameful conditions that people don't like to talk about, don't want to admit this is happening in my family, and actually would rather, the words you used were people bailing you out, were feeding your addiction, because rather that than have everybody know that things are not right in our family. Mm.
Yes, people struggle with the sense of failure and the shame that that carries. But of course, it's really repairable if people reach out to the help that's available.
Have either of you been able to repair the relationships, the personal relationships that were damaged by your addictions?
Yeah, absolutely. Over a period of time, they've been, especially with kids, have definitely been on the up. The wife that went through everything with me is an ex-wife now, but that was what happened in our lives. But easily chattable and get on really, really well. So relationships definitely do mend. There's no guarantee that every relationship is going to mend. I had thought at the time that stopping gambling made relationships fixed. What I realized is it made them real. So the gambling removed, things became real.
How about you, Mark?
100%. Repaired the relationship with my children. Unfortunately, also got divorced as a result of my gambling. But I've moved on, and my ex-wife and I have both moved on, and I think we're both happier now.
You've paid a high price for it, but I think you've also done something remarkable in coming here to share this with us. And I'd like to leave our listeners with some contact information. If someone listening is recognizing themselves in this conversation, recognizing their loved one, how do they reach out firstly to Gamblers Anonymous, and then, Andre, secondly, to the National Responsible Gambling Program? Should we start with GA? Tony, what's the best way to get in touch?
So there is a Gamblers Anonymous website, South Africa website, but I think – so the Cape Town they could just Google Gamblers Anonymous in South Africa, and they'll find it on there. And then there's a number there for KZN area, one for Joburg, one for Cape Town, and they could call whichever area they're in. But if they are, I'm guessing, on this radio station, mostly in the Cape Town area, then the cell number they can use is 0844-00-5844, and that's what they'll also find on the website.
Okay, and we'll tweet that number as well. Thanks so much, Andre, for the Responsible Gambling Board.
Yes, there's a toll-free line, helpline, 24/7. It's 0800-006-008. And Ikhandi is in Kenilworth, 021-761-7348.
Right, we'll share all of those numbers during the next break on our Twitter feed and social media pages as well. I want to thank all three of you for joining us today. Thanks so much, and our best wishes to all three of you.
Thanks.
Andre.